Ever pinch pennies all year for that one family vacation, only to feel the budget blues afterwards? If so, I was just like you. After three vacationless years, I stumbled on Credit Card Rewards Travel and cracked the code to amazing vacations that I could actually afford.
Welcome to Wonderland on Points. In this podcast, you will discover how opening credit cards strategically can save you thousands on travel. We're not just dreamers anymore. We're two adventurous moms turning dreams into reality. Join us as we spill all the points and miles secrets.
And contrary to popular belief, you don't have to spend $1 million to earn 1 million points. Traveling on credit card points isn't reserved for those with overflowing bank accounts. It's for everyday people like you and me, learning to turn routine expenses into free travel.
Consider us your points travel guides. This is Wonderland on Points. Let the adventure begin. Welcome back to the Wonderland on Points podcast. I am your host, Mary Ellen, and it is time to put on your friendship bracelets. We are taking a quick trip back to the Eras Tour. I know it is officially over, but it is not over today because we are going to talk to a guest who actually went internationally to the Eras Tour because of how affordable it was to go see the concert overseas. So it's super cool. And you'll just kind of learn a lot about going to Singapore in general. Joanna, are you a Swiftie? You didn't go to a concert, right?
Didn't go to a concert. Neither of us went to concerts. I would have to say I would have gone had a really good opportunity presented itself. Am I a Swiftie? No, probably not. I probably can't claim that title for myself. Don't come for me, people. Do I like some Taylor Swift songs? Yes, I do. Do I know a lot more of the old songs than the new songs? Yes, I do. So I'm sorry if this offends anybody. I have to say I don't often listen to the radio. I listen to books and podcasts a lot more than music these days. So, you know, maybe
you're
I'm a little
such a
out
musical
of the loop.
Person. That's kind of surprising.
I know. Isn't that weird? That's, I know. Yeah. You know, so I go in phases where sometimes it's like all music all the time. And usually during those times, I'm picking like old nostalgic music, not taking the time to listen to new music because new music always has to grow on me no matter who it is. No matter if it's my favorite artist on the planet, I usually don't like anything the first time I hear it. And it's really weird. And I have to like adjust. So I don't know. I'm just stuck.
I get
stuck in my ways. But I watched the Eras Tour, obviously the movie, and I was like, this would have been such an extraordinary experience. So I really did want to go, but I wouldn't. I don't think I can claim the title of Swiftie, honestly.
For sure. I entered a lottery when Capital One gave Capital One cardholders the opportunity to enter a lottery to get tickets to the final few shows. I definitely entered the lottery and thought about it like, okay, well, if I win the lottery, my daughter would absolutely love this. She definitely became a Swiftie over the last couple of years. I am, I guess, because of my age. I mean, I was a teenager, I guess, when Taylor Swift was a teenager. I mean, she's a little younger than me, but I remember Tim McGraw. I remember the very first time. This is crazy. Oh, goodness, the Swifties aren't going to like this. I remember the very first time I saw her on an award show, and she performed Tim McGraw, which I loved. Love the song. Love that whole album. Definitely resonated with me as a teenager, slamming screen door and all of that. Mm-hmm. Loved it. Mm-hmm. But when she sang live on that first award show, I thought, oh, well, this girl can't sing at all. She just cannot sing. She doesn't have it live. Her voice was awful. I just thought she is so precious, but she ain't going to make it. She can't sing live. And then look at her going on like she's the biggest superstar of all time.
As
toured
a person,
for the past 2 years.
As a person who knows what nerves can do to an actual voice that's actually talented, I will give that young Taylor Swift a lot of grace because you could have a great voice and you step out on a stage and that adrenaline gets going. You have zero control over your muscles. That has to be practiced over time. And you know.
She's a genius. I give her all the credit now.
It's amazing.
She's truly a musical genius. And I did enjoy seeing the Eras Tour in the movie theater with my daughter. So I'm excited about our episode today. But
me
before
too.
That, you just hit a really exciting milestone.
Yes, I've been watching this forever and it's been driving me absolutely bonkers. A lot of you, especially if you listened to the Midweek Mini last week, I've been super transparent about my credit score. Like it doesn't feel like it should be a secret to me. So when I started all of this, I had gotten my score up to 740, which was a huge accomplishment for me from where we came from with our debt and ruined credit scores from my first marriage and all of that kind of stuff. So I have been floating with my Equifax score at 799 for a very long time now, and it's been driving me nuts. I got really excited the other week. That 1 point. I got excited when I saw my FICO score was 810 the other day. Like, I never check that score because it's not on Credit Karma. So that was exciting. I was like, okay, I did it there. But it was this one, this like stubborn one that used to be 740 and is now 799. And I was this close. And I just wanted that 800. And I got on Credit Karma today. And it's like, your score went up 1 point. And it's finally that nice, beautiful, even 800. So if you guys didn't hear last week's Midweek Mini, go back and listen to it. And especially if you don't know anything about credit scores, guys, this hobby has influenced my life in so many ways and blessed my life in so many ways. And one of those is that it has helped me build my credit to a very good point. And that's amazing. Like, it's not easy for people to come back from a low credit score. It takes a lot of work and dedication. And this hobby has actually helped with that. So anyways, it's exciting.
Congratulations.
Miss
800.
850's next, baby. I just need a longer credit history. That's really my big drawback on my credit score. It's the one thing it tells me is wrong with it. It's not long enough. Haven't had debt for long enough for you guys. Right.
All right. Well, let's roll our episode with Ariana. We are excited for you to hear it.
Yes, let's do it right now.
Today, we have a special treat. We are joined by a new friend that we actually met via Catherine Fan, who did an episode with us back in December about going to Antarctica. You guys may remember Catherine telling us all about Antarctica. Well, she has a mutual friend named Ariana, who they met when they were actually working at the Point Sky. And Ariana has been so gracious to join us today to talk about a really special trip with her sister and her nieces to Singapore. Thank you for joining us, Ariana.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your Points and Miles background.
So I got into Points and Miles around 2011. I was fresh out of college. I, you know, like most college students, had a lot of debt. Didn't really get a chance to travel much. And one day my dad called me at work knowing like how miserable I was and just said, look, we're going to go on a family vacation. We're going to back to Afghanistan where I was born. And then we're going to go to Europe and Dubai, which at the time, Dubai was not like this mega incredible, impressive place that it is now, but it was like, oh, like that sounds cool. So we went, we took this trip, and it was the first time I'd been abroad in almost like 14 years. I hadn't really left, like gone abroad since I moved to the US as a kid. So it was an interesting experience. And when I came back, all I wanted to do was replicate the trip. Like, how can I go on trips like this more? And with zero disposable income. So I started Googling like free travel or like how to travel for less. And surprisingly, I didn't get scammed. I got indoctrinated into this community of, you know, interesting, quirky people who do weird things to earn points and miles. And I was hooked immediately. So I was like, let me do all the things. I will do all the things. I'll get a credit card. I will do the dining rewards program. I will, you know, buy coins from the US Mint if I can. So, yeah, it kind of set me off on this obsessive path, and I started collecting every bit of information online. Like every blog post with anything remotely interesting, I would like keep track of. And when friends and family would ask me about this, I would share that information with them. And at a certain point, they were like, why don't you just do your own blog? You have all this stuff on like a Word document. Why don't you just make a website? So I started doing that, and immediately it was like, you know, I kind of got like pulled into this world of like points bloggers, and I was on the boarding area like community. I, you know, ended up working for Flyer Talk and running one of my favorite points blogs, which was the Frugal Travel Guy at the time. So I kind of just like immediately I feel like my life just like transformed, and it was like a message, like, this is where you're supposed to be. This is your new life. So yeah, I haven't like quit since. I've been, you know, finding creative ways to earn points ever since. And, you know, the industry has its ups and downs, but there are always workarounds. So I love like exploring new ways to kind of, you know, game the system and maximize my points.
Absolutely. I love that you just took that as a sign that you were in the right place, because it sounds like that's 100% accurate. So you are a full-time travel writer freelancer now, yes? That's your full-time job?
I primarily work freelance, but I also blog on my website. And yeah, this whole thing became my life.
That's amazing. Did you go to college for journalism?
I studied communications, which is kind of like big, you know?
But yeah, no, I know. I did too. I feel like that's what those of us who like to like talk but don't quite know what we want to do, or like to write and don't know quite what we want to do, communications, it covers all the things. But that's perfect. I mean, it seems like it probably just seamlessly transitioned you into a space where you were prepared to take on all these opportunities as you were accumulating all this knowledge. So I love that. I think it's amazing. We had the opportunity to read your incredible article about this trip that we're going to talk about today. And when we're done, everybody should go read it. I don't want to talk too much about it at the beginning, because then it'll just spoil everything we're going to talk about during the episode. But we've never done a Taylor Swift episode, guys, but today we are, because this points and miles trip was not just to go to Singapore and experience that, but it was to see Taylor Swift. And there was such a mania, I would say, that swept our country over the last year when it came to, not even just our country, everywhere, every person everywhere. I feel like I'm the only one that didn't go to a Taylor Swift concert, because I have a 13-year-old, I feel like, and a full-time job, and you can't just pick up and run to other countries, and I definitely couldn't afford them here. So when I was reading about the way that you did this whole thing, it was so magical and so exciting, and you did so much of it on point. So we wanted to tell everybody this story. So maybe start us right from the top. You actually initially were going to go to a concert somewhere else. So just start us at the beginning of the story right there, where you already had plans and then they started to shift a bit.
Yeah. So when tickets went on sale in the US, they were pretty impossible to get, right? Everything sold out. The resale tickets were astronomically priced. I mean, like nosebleed seats were going for like $2,500, which is insane. And then what happened is my niece was very determined to go. She was like, I'm going to make this happen. She signed up to like buy tickets to the Toronto show. She got picked. We ended up buying tickets to the Toronto show. And then it kind of set in like, wow, we have to go to like Toronto in October. It's going to be cold. And also, you know, we had floor seats, which were great, but not great for kids necessarily when you're on the eighth row, because you can't really see the stage. And my niece started to like explore like other ways to see the show. Like, is there, you know, she had it in her head, like she wants to sit in the front row. Like, I wonder if we can get like front row seats somehow if we go abroad. And I really will give the credit to her, because she made like a whole presentation about like why we should go abroad, why we should sell our tickets and go abroad to see the show. And one of the points she made was like, the travel doesn't have to cost anything, because, you know, my aunt, she's going to use the points anyway.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I was so proud of her for that. I was like, I can't be annoyed, because this is like, I love that she included that in there. And so she figured out that like in Singapore, especially, you could get like the nosebleeds for $50. You can sit in the front row for like way, way less than like a fraction of the cost of what the tickets go for in the US. So she found some really amazing seats, and she was really lobbying and asking me like, would it make sense if we just sold those tickets and then we bought, you know, these tickets and we get to go to Singapore and it's like, you know, experience all this culture and it's educational. So I looked into it. And, you know, my sister was kind of like on the fence, and eventually she was like, you know what? I need a vacation. Let's go. Let's do it. So she jumped on board, and I just started to like do all the planning and sold the Toronto tickets and booked us a trip to Singapore.
I love it. I'm picturing this middle schooler with a PowerPoint and using a little clicker to go through and give her presentation and pitch. That's what I'm imagining in my head. So let's dig into the actual trip to Singapore. Where did you guys fly from in the U.S.? Was there a direct flight? Did you have to connect? Tell us a little bit about the airline and the points price, those good flight details.
Yeah, so we ended up flying United directly out of San Francisco. It was a 17 and a half hour flight.
Woo!
It was really long and boring. Oh my God, it was so boring. But they had like, you know, like they were playing Taylor Swift music on the plane and they, you know, try to make a long flight, super long.
That's so funny. So was it full of other people going to the concert? They knew that?
So the plane, surprisingly, was like mostly empty, but there were like Swifties on the plane, you could tell, because, you know, they had their bracelets. And then the deplaning music was, you know, I think it was they were playing All Too Well. And on the IFE, they had her whole like her albums, Taylor's version. So it was kind of like a cool experience that they like incorporated that, thinking there will probably be people flying out there for the show. But it was interesting because when I got there, I noticed like most people were actually flying in from surrounding Asian countries, not so many people from the US. So we were kind of an anomaly there. But we redeemed 40,000 life miles, Avianca life miles per person. And flights at the time were like $1,200 round trip. But I didn't want to book a flight on cash because I knew we were probably going to go somewhere else. Booking one way on points would give us more flexibility. So I ended up redeeming points. The hotels were astronomical. Like, I mean, we're staying at the Conrad Centennial. It was $700 a night, which is outrageous for
was
one
that
room.
Because the concert was happening then, or is it always that expensive?
It's not always that expensive. Okay. This was because of the concert. I mean, I've traveled to Singapore before, and I think it was like $250 a night for like a nice hotel. So this was definitely different. But it was also because this hotel was near the metro and the metro had a direct like route to the arena. So a lot of Swifties actually chose this hotel because of how quickly they could get there. And it was a really nice hotel, but we did not want to pay $1,400 a night for two rooms. So I ended up redeeming 70,000 Hilton points per night. And then I also had a free night award for my Hilton Aspire card. And then my sister did not have points. So we got lucky because Hilton was running a point sale and we managed to buy 70,000 points, I think was $300. So we just bought all the points we needed and it ended up being $300 a night, which was a good trade-off, I feel like, because
absolutely.
You know, who wants to pay $700? And it was an incredible hotel. They had lounge access where you could have like afternoon tea and evening appetizers. And because they restricted children from the lounge, I think in the afternoon, we kind of complained about that. We're like, well, that's not, I wish you advertise that kids can't be in the lounge in the afternoon. And they instead offered us complimentary breakfast in the restaurant downstairs. So we got free breakfast, basically like free dinner and an incredible like luxury hotel experience for $300, which was not bad.
Absolutely worth it. I mean, we had an episode recently talking about like when is the right time to buy points. And that sounds like the perfect example. I mean, she didn't have points to spend anyways, but it's like, why would you spend $700 a night when you can spend $300 a night? It just makes sense. The math is mathing. I want to go backwards to the flight for a second, because I think I read that if you had booked the cash, even though it was 1200 round trip, there was a stop. And you preferred the nonstop route and it was 40,000 points per person. And like you said, the flexibility of being able to go where you wanted to after that. Is that accurate?
That's true. Yeah. Because again, the flight is already long enough at 17 hours. I did not want to stop over. I mean, I guess some people find that more convenient because they're like, oh, you break up your trip into like 10 hours and then 7 hours. Like with three kids, we do not want that. We're like, let's get on the plane, let's sleep the whole time and wake up, you know, just like everyone in good spirits. So that's what we ended up doing. And a direct flight was going to cost a lot more. So it just made sense, like use the points. It's cheaper, it's direct, and we got more flexibility, you know, in terms of like where we go next.
Absolutely. Any tips for surviving a 17-hour flight in economy?
oh my God, have a lot of and it is so boring. And I will say the seats were not uncomfortable.
That's good.
I've flown like Etihad economy on 16-hour flights. It's just like torture, but this was just boring. Like bring a good book, bring a coloring book, crochet, like whatever you can to make that time feel productive, because otherwise it's a lot, you know.
Absolutely. You said the plane was almost empty. Were you guys able to like lay down sideways in some seats? Because that, yeah. I got to experience that once at 14 years old when I went to Germany. I had a whole row to myself overseas and I just laid down with no shame.
Yeah. It's like, you know, like sort of like a mini business class.
Yeah.
That worked out really well. Yeah. Because the kids got to do that. I kind of just like sat up most of the flight and watched like movies, you know. Because what do you do on a long flight? You watch Gatsby for the 500th time. You know, it's a waste of time. You know, it's going to end. But yeah, the kids got to like lay down and get their own little beds. So that was comfortable and convenient for everybody.
That worked out very well.
I was actually laughing when I was emailing Ariana before we started recording, because I just got off of a 16-plus-hour flight on United as well. And one of the movies I watched on the plane to help pass the time was Crazy Rich Asians, which is such a fun movie. Very cute. Such a good movie. Such a good movie. And it is in Singapore. And so one of the questions that I asked her and told her that I was going to ask is Singapore as opulent and just gorgeous as it looked in the Crazy Rich Asians movie?
I will say yes. And it's funny you say that, because my sister also, when she saw that movie, was like, is that CGI? I'm like, no, the giant trees are real. That's the Gardens of the Bay. It really is that incredible. Singapore is like one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. It is one of the cleanest places. You don't really find trash anywhere. Everything is like, you know, there are flowers planted everywhere, you know. Anthony Bourdain called it Disneyland with a death penalty. And it really is like Disneyland. Whoa. I don't know about the death penalty, but it is like Disneyland. You know, the aesthetics, it's stunning. When you fly into the airport, you see like the Gardens of the Bay. And I have a picture of this. I remember the first time I flew over it, I was like, what is this? This is like something from an alien planet. It looks unreal. Just gorgeous, like landscaping and these incredible buildings made of glass. And you realize going to places like this, like, wow, I really thought like the US is kind of like as nice as it gets, but it's not. There's a whole world out there that's so like incredible and opulent. And you don't realize it until you go, you know, you leave the nest.
100%. I remembered reading that you had been before, and I think you said you stayed at a Hyatt. And since people really like these trip deep dives because they like to sometimes emulate the trips that our guests talk about, I would say for our average listener, most of them are wanting a Hyatt stay anytime that that's possible. So I know this is not this recent trip, but can you give us a little review of staying in a Hyatt previously in Singapore?
Yeah, so I stayed at the Grand Hyatt Singapore in 2015. And I will say, Hyatt is usually my go-to as well. But that hotel was under construction, so I could not go stay there. The location is great. It's right on Orchard Road, which is like where all the shopping is. It's really like that area is sort of like Times Square, but without all the like annoying parts of Times Square. Like there's no one on the street, like, you know, hassling you or trying to people dress as characters and some of the seedier things you see in Times Square. It's like very nice. And it's close to everything. If you're there for, you know, the first time, it's close to the, like all the incredible hawker centers. So it's a wonderful place to stay if you are going to Singapore. I remember they had an incredible lounge that had like a full blown restaurant. Okay. It was a restaurant where you could eat for free if you redeemed a club upgrade award or booked a room with access. And it was a really, really impressive hotel. Anthony Bourdain stayed there when he did a special. I think it was no reservations. So it's a great hotel. And I think they're reopening either this year or next year. So it's worth checking out. The other hotel is there's an Andaz. And the Andaz is actually kind of close to where I stayed at the Conrad Centennial. And I think that's more for like business travelers. But you're also close to the like historic area of Singapore, the like where the mosque is. That area is really stunning. It's, you know, you don't see the big shiny buildings as much. You get like the beautiful one level, like shops that, you know, have been there for like over 100 years. So
amazing.
I think that could also be a good place. And that hotel is really luxurious. I think it's 20,000 points a night.
That's
like
great.
A category 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a category 5 for sure. Yeah. So I would check that out if you're a Hyatt junkie.
Did you guys rent a car or did you just use taxis and public transportation to get around?
So Singapore has excellent public transportation. We used the metro a few times, but mostly we used Grab, which is like their Uber. They were offering Swifties 15% off that week. So it was like a nice little way to save on transportation. Plus there's 5 of us. So getting on a subway wasn't always like the most efficient way to get around, but it is very affordable. Both Grab ride shares and metro. But yeah, we took the metro to the stadium because it was right in front of our hotel. I think it was 10 or 15 minutes. So it was super convenient.
Does it feel pretty safe too?
Yes. Singapore is actually one of the safest countries in the world. There's virtually no crime. And some of the crime that occurs is at the hands of the tourists, from what I've read. So it's like petty stuff. But yeah, you want to be on your best behavior there because they're all on their best behavior. Even when I spoke to like, you know, rideshare drivers, they would say, oh, I'm comfortable with my kids being out at night alone, like just walk out and about. It's that safe, you know, so it's definitely a great place, I think, for family travel or even like solo female travel. It's very safe.
That's great. I was going to backtrack a tiny little bit and ask about the hotel. So you guys did have to get 2 hotel rooms. So I'm guessing there's occupancy rules, or did you do it for comfort?
We did it for comfort because I think the rooms were equipped with queen beds or double beds. I don't recall, but there were 5 of us. So it was just better to get 4 beds total for everybody. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of bags, you know, when you're traveling with kids. You've got a lot of luggage. So it's always better to just get 2 rooms and have more space to spread out. And I felt like because we had one of the hotels covered on points, the other was $300, it was worth it, you know, just to have that extra comfort.
For sure. But I'm thinking for like for a family, Mary Ellen has a family of 5. She's got 3 kids. The youngest is rather little. Do you know about the occupancy rules? Like, do you think they would allow a rollaway to come in for the toddler and put 5 in a room, or you think they're pretty strict like some areas in Europe?
Yeah, I think Asia is a little less strict in that regard, but I think that you could get a rollaway bed. That's something you should always ask for in advance, because a lot of times I've had hotels tell me like, we're out of rolling beds. Mm-hmm. We don't have that. And then others will charge money for it. So you have to think about, do I want to pay the extra whatever fee a night, or do I want to redeem points for another room? I don't remember what the exact policy was at this hotel. Usually they cap it at like 4 people per room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the toddler, they might make an exception and just allow 5. But
yeah,
it depends.
Yeah, it's worth an email for anybody trying to squeeze a family into a single room. How is it navigating with a language barrier? Does everybody speak English?
Singapore, I mean, most people. Almost everyone speaks English. There was no issues whatsoever. I mean, from the check-in to just like to going out and about, like everyone pretty much speaks English. So there was no language barrier. We had a bit of a barrier in Thailand. That was a little challenging sometimes. But a lot of times I just pull out like Google Translate when I need to and, you know, kind of get that going, and it helps.
Technology these days is very impressive when it comes to that. I mean, there's really no barrier at all anymore. You can go anywhere you want.
Yeah, it's definitely positive.
Did you guys do any other activities? I know you went primarily for the concert, but what were some other highlights of maybe things you checked out while you were there?
We did so many things. First of all, there's a lot of Eras themed attractions there. Like they had all these installations at the Marina Bay Sands Mall where, you know, they had like Taylor's guitar and you could take a picture with it. And then like a piano, which I don't know if it was her piano, but it looked like the piano from one of her music videos. And then we went and we did Gardens by the Bay, which is the most stunning, incredible place. I mean, it's like a giant greenhouse. Okay.
That's amazing.
Greenhouse. Yeah. It's stunning. They have plants from like different, like they have plants from like California, from all over the world. And they're all laid out and landscaped in this like stunning display. You know, like they'll take plants and make them look like an animal. And, you know, they always have different displays depending on what time of the year it is. And yeah, I love Gardens by the Bay. We did the night safari, which is cool. I really love Chinatown. I feel like that was kind of a hidden gem because the food in Chinatown was so good. And then I really like the Kampung Glam area, which, you know, I mentioned is kind of like that old area by the mosque where, you know, there's a lot of like one story buildings that have now been converted into shops, but there's a lot of history there. So I really love that. And and we hit up a lot of hawker centers too. So that was fun. And that was this trip. The last trip I did a lot more like touristy stuff, but you know, the kids could only take so much. So
Of course. What is the cost of a lot of these kinds of activities? Like the garden you mentioned, are things pretty reasonable or are they hiked up because of the tourists?
They're actually very reasonable. I want to say, and don't quote me on this, but I think Gardens by the Bay may have been like $12 a person. It was not expensive. Food is super cheap in Singapore. Like, go to the hawker centers or the food courts. It's really reasonable, which is surprising considering, you know, Singapore is known as this, like, you know, one of the wealthiest countries, most millionaires per capita or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, the food is... Everything is very affordable. And even like the hotels, if you can get a good deal or you can redeem points, you'll be so comfortable in Singapore.
Yeah. It sounds incredible.
Yeah. It's very family friendly too. The first time I went there, I just remember thinking like, oh, I'm going to come back here one day and bring my nieces because, you know, it's such like a, it's very family friendly. And if you're there by yourself, it's very safe and you can get around easily. And you're in a really great prime location to go anywhere else in Asia. So it's like a great stopover destination or starting point for Asia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you guys took advantage of that. You went to Phuket, Thailand on this same trip, and you went to Seoul, South Korea. Tell us about finding those connecting flights and putting together that itinerary, because that sounds a little bit intimidating. You know, I'm somebody on the East Coast in the United States. Like, it blows my mind a little bit, the idea of booking flights in other countries. And I don't know, it sounds a little scary. Is it that hard? Was it pretty easy to find these other hopover flights?
It was very easy. Our prime sort of criteria for our next stop was we want to go somewhere beachy and we want a direct flight. Mm-hmm. So I just went on Google Flights. I put in Singapore and then I looked at the map to see where we could go. And one of the options was Phuket. And I, you know, consulted with like my sister, like, oh, you know, I've never been to Phuket. So I can't give you any feedback, but it looks nice. We could go there. We go to Malaysia. And we ended up picking Phuket. Flights were really cheap. It was like under $100 a person. So we're okay, this is totally reasonable. You go to another country. And we got to Phuket. Initially, we stayed at the Hyatt Regency, which has, they have this like two-bedroom suite that was 20,000 points a night.
Wow.
And I think on cash, it was like maybe 450 or something, but on points, you could book it for 20,000 points. And it was a nice hotel. It was a bit far from the airport. Ultimately, we ended up checking out because the road noise was a little much, but it was a very nice hotel. The food was incredible. People were so nice, the staff. But yeah, if you want like a budget option, that Hyatt Regency, and you love Hyatt, that Hyatt Regency pick, because for 20,000 points, you get two rooms.
So, yeah.
And a little suite area. And then we ended up switching to the Marriott, and we liked that hotel better because it was quieter and it was like a, you know, it had access to like a private beach. It was more of what we were looking for like rest and relaxation. So that was a great place to that place. The nightly rate, I think, was like $200 a night. We ended up paying that because we didn't have Marriott points. And we kind of felt like for what it is, you get a room with like pool access and breakfast is included. And everything else is reasonable and it's close to the airport. So we ended up making that switch after the first night.
Yeah. And with a private beach, that sounds like a great cash rate.
Yeah, it was really wonderful. And some of the rooms had like, they had access to the like lagoon pool. Do you know the swim outs?
Yeah.
It was Yeah, we step out on your balcony and you're in the pool and you just jump in. And so the kids were like obsessed with that because all they wanted to do was swim.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun. Everybody got sunburned after like first day.
That would be me. Okay. And after you went to Phuket, you went somewhere else. So tell us all about that.
So we ended up going to Seoul directly. We booked a direct flight. We didn't know we were going there until like 2 days before because we weren't sure. We were like, do we go there? Do we go to Malaysia? And then a friend of mine just told me, like, you're going to love Seoul because the food is incredible. You are going to be closer to home because you're flying like towards home when you fly to Korea. So your flight home is going to be shorter. And just like, it's supposed to be wonderful. So we ended up going there. We didn't really know anything about it. And I know like Korean skincare and all that stuff is like trending now. I'm not up on it. And it didn't appear on my feed until I came back. But all of that, I would have like, well, that question gone to Seoul because it's so incredible. But yeah, we went to Seoul. We were there for 3 days. And it's my favorite like city now. I cannot wait to go back. I had the best experience. I know that Singapore is known as like the world's sort of like food, you know, like foodie paradise. Mm-hmm. I feel like a little overhyped in that regard. Yes, the food is good. Yes, the food is cheap. But is it the best food in the world? No. Seoul has the best food in the world. Like, we just kept eating and eating. And we would, and I don't know if it was like the elevation or what, like the food was incredible. We would go even to like 7-Eleven and we would get like their little like bags of coffee. And it was like the best coffee I've ever had. We would get like, you know, ramen, and the ramen was incredible. When you go to Seoul, nothing food-wise will ever like make you happy again. You're going to be like, I just... It's not the same. We would go to like Myeongdong Market, which is right outside of a like shopping area. And a lot of the vendors only took cash. So I would like have the equivalent of $100. And we would just like walk down the lane, get everything until we ran out of money. And then it was like, okay, we should either get more money or stop eating. But it was really great.
We're going till we bust. We're either going to run out of money or run out of belly space, but we're going hard.
I feel like I can see Mary Ellen's eyes sparkling. Mary Ellen is a big, like, she's a fan of the K-dramas, and she was actually planning a trip to Seoul that didn't work out because of a missed transfer bonus, but it's back on the table, I think, for next year. So I'm sure that you are excited hearing all of these. You probably already know all this stuff because you know all the things. I knew none of it. You know what I know about Korea? There's like this 12-step scalp treatment they do in spas there, and I want one. So I watch it on Instagram from start to finish. I will watch an entire scalp treatment, and it's all I want in the entire world. It looks like the most relaxing thing ever, and it's like $100, and it takes like several hours, and they just do all this stuff to your head, and it looks amazing.
The scalp treatment—hilarious. They have all this high-end like skincare equipment. Like you go in there, and they use these like x-rays or like some advanced equipment to look at the different layers of your skin and tell you exactly what's wrong with it and what products to get. But I will tell you, Mary Ellen, if you end up going, you have to make those appointments in advance because they get booked up.
That's what I've heard. I think if I walked into one of those Korean spas, they would either like turn and run and lock the door and be like, we cannot help you. You are beyond our help.
No, stop.
Or they'd get really excited because I could probably get quite the makeover. But no. I would definitely like to check them out one day. I'm kind of now I'm eyeballing summer 2026 for Asia. I don't know what exactly it's going to look like. I would very much like to go to Seoul myself and also Japan probably, but we'll see because now I'm very intrigued by Singapore as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Singapore is lovely. In the summer, it's a little bit like it's a little hot. Just wear very thin layers, one thin layer, and you know, be prepared to like take a shower 5 times a day because
I'm from South Carolina. I lived in Florida. I do the heat and humidity well. I can handle it.
You'll be right at home.
A lot of people have been talking all over the internet about like the visa requirements changing for going to Europe, where now you have to fill out certain paperwork before you go to Europe. It's not very daunting. It doesn't take very much time. But I am curious, with these three different places that you went, was that something you needed to look into ahead of time in terms of filling out paperwork? I mean, when you were making these decisions very last minute, mm-hmm. I guess it must be pretty seamless or easy, whatever you have to do.
Yeah. For Singapore, I think it was an e-visa that I applied for ahead of time. I do not remember what the process was for Thailand and Korea, but in general, I think they all had like e-visas and it was like quick. Pretty much go anywhere with a U.S. passport very easily and just like, you know, or even like show up. I've gone to Turkey without a visa, shown up, and they're like, okay, just go over there and get your visa like at that desk and then come back.
Okay.
So it really depends. And Asia is pretty like, or it has been pretty lax. So I want to say you get your visa online in advance, but still like do it a few days ahead of time, because they tell you it takes like, you know, 24 to 72 hours. And it's usually like within a couple of hours, but you don't want to ruin your trip because it did take 72 hours.
Absolutely.
So let's get back to Singapore, because we haven't really talked about the concert itself. So was it everything that your niece had hoped and dreamed for? Was it more? Tell us about it, because I haven't been to one either. I've seen the movie, the Eras Tour movie, so I have an idea of what the concert looks like. I've seen, of course, I think all the world saw clips on Instagram for a solid 2 years from the show. So we have an idea about it, but tell us firsthand, what was it like?
Okay, so I've seen the movie and I've gone to the concert. The movie, you're getting a pretty incredible experience, especially if you're anywhere except for like the first five rows, because you see like the stage effects and all the cool stuff. So I love the movie. Going to the concert was totally surreal. We arrived there, you know, taking the metro. And as soon as you arrive, it's already like a whole vibe. There's all these people dressed up and, you know, you have concert goers from all over Asia. Everybody's so welcoming. They want to trade friendship bracelets with you, you know, just like at random. There's a DJ playing like Taylor Swift music. Not all of it is Taylor's version, interestingly enough. I don't know how that happened.
Okay.
But, you know, they had like friendship bracelet creation stations where you could, you know, make your own bracelet and all that stuff. And my niece and I, we picked up like our VIP boxes, which if you go to the US show, they mail it to you, but there you have to pick it up. So it's kind of like a hassle. But we got our boxes. We went down to the, to like wherever our designated entry was. And then, you know, they give you your bracelet. We got to the top of the stairs. We're walking down and I'm just like, I cannot believe this is really happening. This is insanity that we're here and that we're like going to be sitting where we're sitting. We made it to our section. And here's the thing about the stadium that's wild, okay? The stadium is partially roofed. So it has like a roof on one side and then not on the other side. And the seats are ventilated. There's like AC blasting under the seats, okay?
Wow.
So if you're in the stands, you're nice and cold. But if you're on the floor, there is no ventilation and you're just like on fire.
It
is
Oh, no.
Cold. Oh, gosh.
And, you know, it was raining right before you came to the or entered the arena. So my hair was like that. I spent so much time like blowing out. It was like wet. My makeup
no.
was gone. Like we just like rushed to our seats. I'm drenched from the rain and also from the humidity. And so it was not a good look. But like we're sitting there. Sabrina Carpenter came out and did her, you know, her performance, which is cool. And then the, you know, the lights went down and like all the dancers came out and the clock was ticking and all that cool stuff. And when she popped out and Taylor Swift popped out, I just was like, oh my gosh, she's right there. Like she's right there. I cannot believe how close I am.
That's crazy.
It was like the whole show was crazy. She spent a lot of it like in our area where we were sitting in the front row. And she just like, she kept walking past us. And then, you know, at one point at the end of the show, what was she singing? I think it was when she was doing Karma. She was singing, and she came over and like looked right at me and my niece and was like singing to us, and we're both screaming, and my niece blew her a kiss and she winked back at her.
Oh.
And so it was just like, oh my God, Taylor Swift winked at me.
Poor childhood memories.
Yeah, but you know what's wild? At Thanksgiving, we're all going over like what was our favorite thing of the year, right? And my niece was like, she talked about something else. And I'm like, excuse me, like you sat front row at the Eras Tour and Taylor winked at you. That is your favorite memory. And she's like, oh, yeah. She's like, you know, I forget that happened to me sometimes. She's like, I totally forget that happened. So
she's like, it felt like a dream. Yeah.
Yeah. And I still like forget sometimes. I'm like, that was really cool if that happened. But yeah, she performed most of the set right in front of us. She kept walking past us. I mean, she was doing style. She was doing her little dance with her backup dancer. Like, it was right in front of us. And I just like, yeah. I mean, when the tickets went on sale, you know, 2 years ago and getting them was impossible, I never imagined I'd be sitting in the front row in Singapore and paying less than everybody paid for their, like, the tickets in the U.S. on the secondary market. So
yeah points and miles,
aunt of the year.
Yeah, for sure, aunt of the year. But also just points and miles and the things that they can take you to do, it really knows no bounds. I feel like it's just your creativity.
And you know, I ended up actually writing a guide about like where else can you go and see Taylor Swift for less, and that guide ended up like outranking one that Rolling Stone wrote on Google.
Wow.
I get a lot of people messaging me saying like, thank you for writing that. Like, because of you, I went to like Poland. I went to like, you know, the Argentina show to see her, and it would have been impossible otherwise, but I used points to fly there. And you know, the tickets were very cheap in those areas. I think even Catherine like ended up going to the Amsterdam show, I think. Cause she was like, oh,
she said,
yeah. She's like, I saw your guide. And I was like, okay, well, if I can do it for that price, then I'll do it. So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think the people here that don't get into points and miles or don't go down the rabbit hole of deals. I know so many people that were like, well, we're just dropping this money because I told my child I was going to take them. And they spent $5,000-$6,000 for terrible, terrible seats. Like, I'd rather have a vacation and good seats. Like, why would you not? It's kind of like going to Disneyland in Tokyo instead of going to Florida. Just do it. Just use your points and go do that. It's half the price and way cooler.
It is, yeah. And so that's the thing about points is like, I've always tried to use points to not just like fly around aimlessly, because that's very tempting. You know, it's like there are people who will be like, oh, I flew to like Dubai in first class because I wanted to experience like the showers or whatever on the plane. And that's tempting. And sometimes I'm also like, should I just randomly fly around the world for these cool, like, you know, experiences? But ultimately, I want to build like memories with my family, with my nieces. And I've taken my parents on trips and I've taken my whole family on vacations. And it's like being able to do it with points and flying in a better cabin, giving them first class and being able to stay at incredible hotels is like more rewarding to me than anything. So I just love being able to like, you know, share that experience with, you know, the people closest to me.
Absolutely. It really is a gift.
That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us, because you're such an expert. I mean, you've been doing this for over a decade. You've even been writing about this for over a decade. So give us one or two, and I know it's hard with that vast knowledge and experience, and there's so much, but give us one or two hot tips for maybe someone who's new to points and miles, or just one of your favorite tips about traveling with points and miles.
Gosh, there's so many tips. I'll give you one conventional, one unconventional tip.
Perfect.
The unconventional tip is just redeem your points however they make sense to you. Don't worry about like, am I maximizing it? Am I getting 4 cents per point in value by flying first class? Do the thing that makes you save money.
Mm.
So in my case, like redeeming 40,000 points or 80,000 points round trip for a flight that costs like $1,200, not the most, you know, like high value redemption.
Right.
But I didn't want to pay $1,200 a person for the flight. And I had the points and I got them, you know, I took advantage of transfer bonuses. It's like, this is good enough for me if it saves me money and I don't spend $7,000 on airfare. Wonderful. So I really recommend just like doing what works for you. If you want to redeem your points on like a flight to go visit your grandma in Florida, do that. You don't need to fly to, you know, Dubai or Singapore to be like, oh, I got great value out of my points. Go take a staycation locally if you want to. If flying to, you know, Cancun is a hassle and you don't want to, use them however they work for you. And don't worry about the noise. Mm-hmm. The more conventional tip, I guess, is to just like, which is what I do most of the time, is really look at ways that you can stretch your points further. You know, think about, a lot of hotel programs will give you like the fourth or fifth night free. Take advantage of those longer stays to, you know, redeem fewer points. Some airlines have companion passes that you can get from a credit card. Like, how can you earn those, you know, companion passes and stretch your points and your travel budget further, especially if you're traveling with a family? And then the most important thing, I think, is really to invest in award search tools. Like, I use Seats Aero. Mm-hmm. Without Seats Aero, I don't think I could go anywhere, because going on 100 different websites and figuring out like which of these airlines has award availability on the days that I want, it will literally drive me crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And before Seats Aero, I would do that and I would get so frustrated. Sometimes I'd be like, I'm not even going anywhere. This is too much work. But if you just go on Seats Aero, like, it makes it easy. You type in your destination. If you're flexible, you just put like region, and they give you the results, not just for your dates, but you can, I think, go as far as like 28 days before or after, or is it 60 days? But if you use tools like that, that help, you know, make finding award space easier, the whole thing becomes way less stressful.
Yep.
So kind of familiarize yourself with that. And above all else, like, maximize every dollar you spend. Every dollar that goes towards household expenses, especially, put that on a credit card. I know a lot of people can't handle using credit card for everyday spending because they are designed to make you overspend. And I think that needs to be acknowledged. But if you have like your monthly utility bill and your like phone bill and all that stuff, that's going to get paid no matter what. Charge those to your credit card. At the end of the year, you're going to have a nice stash that can save you money on travel, or even that can offset, you know, like household expenses if you, you know, depending on the kind of points you have. So yeah, I think that's really important. Just like maximize every dollar you spend, know what tools are available out there that can help you find award space, and also like ignore everybody and just do whatever works for you.
Love it.
I love it.
It's perfect.
Those are great tips. It's also perfect timing that you mentioned the companion passes, because at least at the time of the initial release of this episode, if you're listening to this in February 2025, Southwest Airlines just has a brand new credit card offer where if you sign up for a personal card, you can get 30,000 points and a companion pass that is good through February 2026. So that's a great opportunity for families. My husband and I have taken advantage of that and flown with our children on companion pass. Definitely something to look into, and very timely advice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's an amazing offer, and I cannot believe that they keep offering that, because it's huge.
Thank you for sharing your time with us today. I loved this episode. I had a lot of fun. And before you leave us, let all of our listeners know where they can find you and all of your offerings, and then maybe shout out a travel creator that you think our listeners would benefit from.
Yeah, so you can find me on my blog, pointchaser.com, or on social media at pointchaser. And another travel creator that I think people should follow is my friend Chris at The Frugal Tourist. Has Chris been on your show yet?
No, this is a new name for us, which is we love. We love new names.
Yeah, I did a quick search and I was like, I don't think he's been on here. But Chris is really great. His content is very like approachable and simple for beginners especially. And he takes these amazing like luxury trips, but then he also does like, you know, more local stuff and stuff that's more attainable. And I think he's just like a great teacher. So if you want to learn like little, you know, unconventional tips and tricks, follow Chris. His social media handle, his website is thefrugaltourist.com. His social media handle is thefrugaltourist with like dashes in between the words.
Okay, I will find that and I'll link him in the show notes. I will link your website in the show notes and your social medias in the show notes so everybody can find you super easily. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys. I had I really enjoyed this chat. Thank you for having me.
It was so fun.
If you enjoyed this show today, please consider writing us a review or clicking 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please subscribe and follow along so that you never miss an episode.
You can follow the podcast on Instagram or YouTube at Wonderland on Points Podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Family Travel for the Win with the number 4.
And you can find me on Instagram at Points to Wonderland.
If you're thinking about getting a new travel rewards credit card, consider using the links in our show notes. Using our links helps to support us and keep our podcast going so we can provide you with all the latest tips and tricks when it comes to traveling on points.
And if you aren't sure which card is right for you, shoot us an email at wonderlandonpoints@gmail.com and we would be happy to walk you through a free card consultation. That's also a great place to send us all of your comments and questions. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you here next time.